The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
And a good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240, hour two of the block. Jake Asman alongside Dan Budick. We're here on Long Island. Lots going on in New York sports. Lots going on in national sports. And over the course of the next hour, we're going to cover it all. Dan, my friend, how are you?
Doing well. Lots to talk about. It's been a while since we've been on WGBB, but it's good to be back.
Absolutely. Thank you to Robert Kowal, our sports director, as always, for giving us the opportunity when we're back from school. We were actually out in Los Angeles this past semester, so when we last left off, I think the Jets had just beaten the Patriots.
Yeah, right? Just beat the Patriots. Right. I remember we were fresh off that win.
We were feeling great. A week later, we all know what happens. We don't have to revisit that storyline, but we will get into the Jets later on in the program. We'll talk a little bit about Ryan Fitzpatrick and what's going on with his contract demands and the latest that came out that the Jets made an offer. It got leaked out, so we'll cover that later into the show. But this is indeed Sports Talk 1240 right here on AM 1240 WGBB. You can also listen on TuneIn Radio, and we're going to open up the phone lines in just a bit, but the number to call is 631-888-8811. But Dan, we got to begin with the New York baseball teams, and we'll start with the Yankees. The Mets right now, they're in the middle of action, into the third inning. Mets trail 1-0. They're headed to the fourth inning going on at Citi Field right now. So we'll keep you up to date on the Mets. But let's start with the Yankees because they had a big win today. A win where they only had one hit, but they still found a way to win 2-1. The Yanks won for the first time in 102 years with only one hit. You got to go all the way back to June 10th of 1914, the last time the Yankees won a game with only having one hit. And that's what happened today. Brett Gardner walked in the top of the seventh inning. Starling Castro came up. John Sterling went nuts on the radio. I went nuts in my car listening to it. And he gave the Yankees what they needed, a 2-1 win. The bullpen came in to replace Nathan Eovaldi, who pitched six really good innings, got out of several different jams. And no run DMC, Betances, Miller, and Chapman. They did their thing, and the Yankees got a big win today, Dan. They take two out of three from the Rays, and they're only, once again, one game under .500.
And it was a big win for the Yankees. And even though they only had one hit, they got the two-run homer from Castro. That was enough. And, you know, when you got the back end of the bullpen like the Yankees had, they got the home run at the right time in that seventh inning, and it really set up. You mentioned it, Betances, Miller, and Chapman, 7-8-9, and that was pretty much it. You know, the problem with the Yankees has been consistent offense and the starting pitching. And, you know, Michael Pineda we saw yesterday, not very good. And that's been really just a consistent bad for him since the middle, towards the end of last season. They got to get better starting pitching if they want to continue to get to .500 and you know, build on that. And I know Joe Girardi has talked about that, getting back to .500 and building off that and trying to get back into contention in the American League East. It starts with the starting pitching, and they got to get better.
No question about it. And you look at this Yankees team right now. Right now, we just said it, 24-25, only one game under .500. At one point, they were 22-22. Then they lost two out of three from the Blue Jays. Then they just took two out of three from the Rays. So they're right back in it. They're going to go to Toronto. They're going to play a good Blue Jays team that just took two out of three from the Boston Red Sox. But you said it, Dan. The starting rotation for the Yankees is the key. We know how good their bullpen is. But not only this starting rotation, you know, when the Yankees were eight game under .500, it was Severino, it was Pineda, it was CeCe going on the disabled list. It was a bunch of guys that were not performing to how the Yankees thought they were going to perform, especially Severino and Pineda, which we'll get to in just a second. Severino goes down, and Ivan Nova comes into this rotation, and he's been really good. Tanaka's been really good. Eovaldi today was really good. So the Yankees' rotation has done its part. The real issue has been Michael Pineda, and this offense not hitting, led by Mark Teixeira, who's been in and out of the lineup, and he's hitting .195. He only has three home runs, which all came in the first seven games of the season this year, and he only has 12 RBIs. This is a guy that was an all-star last year. He struggled. A-Rod's been hurt. Now he's back. This offense with Headley, and we all know what went on there. The Yankees' offense has really struggled, and this is a team that led the American League in runs for most of last year. They finished in second place to Toronto. But the main reason why the Yankees at one point were 8 games under .500 was because this offense was awful at the beginning. They turned it around a little bit. But for them to go anywhere, some guys have to start hitting, especially Mark Teixeira, and they got to be more consistent.
Well, yeah, Mark Teixeira was a guy, and we talked about this last year, was a big reason why the Yankees got to the playoffs was because of the contribution offensively they got from Alex and Mark Teixeira. And this year you've seen A-Rod on the DL. He just got off, and Teixeira – really just that lingering injury, and it really has been the story of the outside of last season, really the last couple of years. And last season he got hurt at the end of last season, had to miss the back end. He just hasn't been able to stay on the field healthy. And the real question is, how much longer can the Yankees, when he does come back, keep Mark Teixeira in the lineup when he's hitting 190, 200, and he's not producing, and he's not driving in runs, and when he's the first baseman in this team, and he's paid to drive in runs? How long can the Yankees withstand Mark Teixeira in this lineup?
And the problem is, who are you turning to? See, the answer would have been, oh, you have Greg Bird, the guy that came in when Teixeira went down last year after he fouled the ball off his toe and ended his season in mid-August. Now, the Yankees are in a spot where they don't have a Greg Bird to turn to because he hurt himself in the offseason. They lost him for the year, and Greg Bird is all than likely going to be the Yankees' opening day first baseman a year from now. But you made the point, how long can they stay with Teixeira? Well, they're banking on Teixeira to turn it around because he's a guy, they're paying a lot of money, he's great defensively.
It's tough to bank on a guy like that to turn around.
He's got to hit. I mean, he can't have only 3 home runs and be hitting under .200 at this point. We're almost in June. This is not just a slow start anymore.
No, it's not a slow start at all. He's just not performing. And I think with the Yankees, if they want to continue to try to get into the playoffs like they did a year ago, they're going to need Mark Teixeira to hit better. They're going to need Alex Rodriguez to hit better. Those two guys are really two monster catalysts in this lineup. Let's take a look at the Yankees lineup. Where would the Yankees be if they haven't been getting the contribution from Carlos Beltran?
He's been unbelievable.
Carlos Beltran has really had a tremendous season. What has he got, 13 home runs now? He's really, over the last 6 weeks, for the most part, carried this lineup as far as a run producing. So I think from that standpoint, where would the Yankees be without Carlos Beltran right now?
And what's been great about Beltran is some of these hits he's having have all been big-time clutch hits. I mean, Carlos Beltran,
he's really been the Beltran of old.
He's been tremendous. And you take out what he did at the beginning of last April when he got off to a really slow start and a lot of people predicted the end for this guy. He hit all last year. He was arguably the Yankees' most consistent hitter. Him and Alex Rodriguez were last year, and it's carried over into this year. Beltran's been tremendous for this team, and you're right. Where would this Yankees team be? I'll tell you what, they wouldn't be a game under .500 without Carlos Beltran. He's been that good for them. And then we were talking about Michael Pineda before, and he's really, right now, with Severino out of this rotation, he's making rehab starts. Maybe he can come back when he's healthy and replace Pineda. But what do you do with Michael Pineda? It's almost like the Matt Harvey effect with this guy. He's 2-6 right now, 6.92 ERA, and he's been bad for not just this season. You really look at Michael Pineda in the second half of last year, and he was not good at all. His ERA was close to 5 in the second half of last year. It's carried over into this season. If you're the Yankees, what do you do with Michael Pineda? Because you can't keep throwing him out there and him getting bombed every start.
Well, agreed, and the thing is, and you compare it to the Matt Harvey situation, it's very similar as far as performance is concerned, but the difference is the Mets have a starting staff where really they're very fortunate where they can really withstand Matt Harvey going out there, at least for the meantime, every fifth day. The Yankees don't have that luxury. They need to fix this issue sooner rather than later, because you're right, when you're melting around .500, you're a game over, a game under, and you're trying to get back in contention.
Because they buried themselves so deep.
They buried themselves so deep. You're right. You can't afford to have a guy in your rotation when you're 24-25 at the end of May, beginning of June. That's 2-6 with a 6.92. And really, let's be honest. So let's call it for spades for spades. He hasn't given the Yankees a chance to win, really, in most of the games he started this year. That's every fifth day. The Yankees really haven't had a shot to win. And when you're a .500 team, a little below, a little above, you just can't afford to have a guy like that in your rotation.
Well, this is what happens when you go at one point in your season, 8 games under .500. The solution to me with this issue is, if Pineda bombs in his next start, he's going to get one more start because Severino's not ready.
Well, what do you do?
Well, you got to put Severino back in this rotation. You hope that Severino, coming off this injury, getting a couple rehab starts in the minor leagues, which, let's be honest, he was going to go to the minor leagues anyway after his last start. He got hurt in that start against the White Sox where he was just terrible anyway. So if you're the Yankees, I think Pineda gets at least one more start. I don't want to hear Joe Girardi try and defend this guy saying they like his stuff. All this, the bottom line is, Dan, this guy's got to produce. You said it yourself. When you're a .500 team and the Yankees don't have that much wiggle room in a division that's full of teams that are just beating each other up, if the Yankees want to stay competitive and compete all season season long. Look at even Michael Pineda or Luis Severino, are both guys they were really counting on to contribute and be the guys that they thought they were getting. Let's give a lot of credit, though. Ivan Nova has come in after losing
the
fifth starter spot, and the big reason why the Yankees have made up so much ground is because since Ivan Nova has been back in this rotation, he's been really good.
So the question is, say Severino does come back, and he's more of the same like he was before he went on the disabled list, where do the Yankees turn to for starting pitching? Are they going to go out and make a trade for a starter? Not a big-name starter, but are they going to go out and try to get, you know, a middle-of-the-rotation guy to chew up innings? Are they going to try to call someone up from the minor leagues? If you're Brian Cashman, what do you do here? Because you're in a very unique situation. Even though you're under 500, you're still in this race. You're not out of it by any stretch of the imagination here. If Severino comes back into the rotation and is not a quality starter and cannot give you quality innings, where do the Yankees go for starting pitching? Are they going to make a trade?
It's a great question. Last year, they did not make a trade. And let's touch on the fact that a lot of people have said the Yankees are going to be sellers. I'll tell you right now, as a Yankee fan and someone that follows his team as close as anyone, the Yankees will not be sellers unless they are significantly out of both the division and one of the wild card spots, because it doesn't make any sense to trade Andrew Miller. He's got a great contract.
Agreed. I would not trade Miller.
If you're going to trade anyone out of those relievers,
I think it's Chapman.
It would be Chapman, but because he's a free agent. But you know the Yankees. Brian Cashman's not going to trade off a team that might still make the playoffs.
Agreed.
If things go right.
I agree with you, but I think Chapman would be an excellent trade piece for the Yankees, because I think even if they do trade Chapman, you still got a killer back end of the bullpen. Let's be real here. You still have Betances and Miller at 8 and 9. And in a month or so, say the Yankees are in the same position they are, six games out of first place, around 500, and to the end of June, and Chapman's throwing 100 miles an hour. He's very efficient. Do you trade a Chapman to a team that can use a closer, maybe a team that's a piece away, and maybe get some chips in here, a young starting pitcher, a couple of young starting pitchers that you can add to the mix? And now all of a sudden, you have some young starting pitchers, and you still have Betances in the eighth and Miller in the ninth. Is that something Brian Cashman will explore? We'll see.
Well, the problem is for the Yankees is, and it's really a problem a lot of teams have, the second wild card in baseball has allowed so many more teams to be competitive, when in the past you would kind of get a feel for who the guys are, who the teams are out there that are going to make some of their guys available, and you'd get an idea who are some of the teams that are going to be like, you know what, we're going for it, we're in the wild card hunt. Now, with two wild cards, the Yankees are in a spot where I don't think they're going to be that far out of it, so they're going to be pretty close to at least one of those spots, and who knows, the way the division's going, with all these teams beating each other up, they'll probably be in the same spot where they were last year, either near first place or battling for first place in a very mediocre division that teams are just beating each other up. You look at the Blue Jays, you look at Boston and the Orioles. The only team that I really can't see winning this division is the Tampa Bay Rays, and they're not even that bad. They could pitch. So what do you do if you're Brian Cashman and you're only a couple games out?
Are you really
going to trade Chapman?
Yeah, well, it's really Brian Cashman, I think, is really in a unique spot here, because clearly the Yankees can use starting pitching. They have a plethora of guys at the back end of the bullpen. It's going to be interesting to see if they decide to leverage and use Aroldis Chapman as trade bait to try to get some starting pitching in there. I will say this. With him being a free agent at the end of the year, I think it makes it very accessible for the Yankees to try to move him. Because realistically, you're not gonna bring him back next year.
He's their most valuable trade piece.
He's their most valuable trade piece. And I think he's the
if
most
they don't trade Miller.
I think he is the most valuable trade piece in baseball. I really do. As far as a major league reliever or anyone. Because here you have a guy that could throw 100 miles an hour in the ninth inning, and teams at the late in the stretch need relievers. They need closers. There's going to be a team in the middle of July, late July, that is a closer away and will give up young starting pitching to try to win now and put that piece at the back end of their bullpen.
Your gut feeling, are the Yankees going to be sellers come trade deadline?
No, because they're the Yankees. Yeah, you're right. It's tough for me to wrap my head around that. I would say no, but I will say this. If they are in this position and they feel they could get a young pitcher that can maybe make an impact now, and you still have the two guys at the end of the bullpen, I think it's very appealing, and I think it might be tough for Cashman not to pull the trigger.
631-888-8811. Let's go out to our first caller of the night, Earl in Bayside. Earl, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, Earl. Thanks for the call.
I just want to talk about Noah Syndergaard's ejection yesterday. You guys think it was warranted?
Well, and we were going to get into that, Earl. Thanks for the call. And I don't think it was warranted. Switching over to the Mets now, Let's get to the Mets.
Earl's taking us to new places.
Earl bringing us full circle to the other team in New York, the New York Mets. And obviously, as a lot of people know, last night Noah Syndergaard getting ejected in the third inning, and I was pretty livid. As a Met fan, really as a baseball fan.
Did you break anything?
You know, I didn't break anything, but I was pretty livid. There was no reason for Noah Syndergaard to get ejected out of the game, and if anyone doesn't know, he threw behind Chase Utley in the leading off the third inning and immediately was ejected out of the game.
I've never seen that before.
And it was hard for me to really wrap my head around that. And considering the fact the Mets and Dodgers had played five games previous to yesterday, no issue. They played a game in Citi Field on Friday night, which the Mets won 6-5 on a walk-off home run by Curtis Granderson. No issue with Chase Utley. And listen, Noah Syndergaard just wanted to brush him a little bit, give him a 99, 100-mile-an-hour fastball behind him. He wasn't trying for any intent. I did not want to put Chase Utley on base. He was not trying to hit him by any stretch of the imagination, but he was trying to throw behind him and back him off the plate a little bit. With everything that happened last year in the playoff game with Ruben Tejada, I didn't see a problem with it. I thought the fair objective by a home plate umpire there to warn both sides, a fair warning, and that would have been the end of it. There was no reason to eject Noah Syndergaard out of the game, and really, in the long term, inadvertently cost the Mets the game. Because here now, Terry Collins, who was ejected also at that point, has to pour out Logan Verrett in there. And now you have to pour out your bullpen in the third inning of a game on Fox, night game, where you probably weren't expecting to use your bullpen until realistically the eighth inning with the way Noah Syndergaard was throwing the ball.
My biggest take on this is, one, let's get the Chase Utley. How big of a perfect villain is this
guy? He is.
I mean, it's amazing.
He hits
not one home run, but then he hits a grand slam.
And Chase Utley's been a Met killer his whole career. So, you know,
38 career home runs now.
I've seen most of them. He's been a Met killer his whole career. And the bottom line is, you know, that aside, the incident, there was no reason Syndergaard should have been thrown out of the game.
I agree with you. And here's the thing, though.
And it really is embarrassing for baseball that here a guy throwing 100 miles an hour did not hit anyone else in the ballgame, was thrown out of the game for throwing behind Chase Utley.
Well, I really think what happened here is, and Syndergaard's got a history of doing this. He threw out their Escobar in the World Series, warnings, not even a warning, they let it go, play resumed, no big deal. I don't think that Syndergaard would have thrown behind Utley had he known he was going to get thrown out.
Of course
not. I think it just surprised everyone.
Oh, it surprised everyone.
And I thought it was a total overreaction by the umpires. See, to me, players got to be able to police themselves. You don't want to be in a situation where the umpires are affecting the outcome of a no-score baseball game in the third inning. If you eject the arguably the Mets' best pitcher in the third inning of a nationally televised game, the same night that they're honoring the 86 Mets, the stadium's filled. I mean, you made an issue that wouldn't have been that big of a deal if you just warned both sides, way bigger than it had to be, and that's my biggest problem. I felt like the umps did not let the players police themselves, how the game has always been policed. Since it's been started over hundreds of years ago, you know how baseball goes, all the way back to the 1800s, players police themselves. And I thought the umpire stepping in there was totally uncalled for, and it made an issue that would not have been that big of a deal way bigger than it had to be.
I agree, and I think it's a shame because Noah Syndergaard was electric last night in the 2+.
I thought he should have started tonight.
Oh, I would have thrown him out there, and I'll tell you what, he might pitch tomorrow in relief if Matt Harvey's terrible. If they get that game in and Matt Harvey's
honestly, I can see that.
I'll tell you
and
what,
you're gonna be there.
Terry's not going to let that game get out of hand tomorrow. Depending on what happens tonight, Mets are down 1-0 right now in the bottom of the fourth, but depending on what happens, if Matt Harvey's bad tomorrow again and he stinks, I would not be surprised. I know Terry said it's not going to happen. I would not be surprised if Noah Syndergaard's up in the third or fourth inning for the Mets in the bullpen, just because of the fact he barely pitched last
night. How many pitches did he end up throwing last
night? I don't know how many throws. I can't imagine
30?
He threw more than 50. For 30, if it was the third, I can't imagine he threw more than 35 or 40.
Probably not.
He gave up a couple hits. I mean, it really.
And he looked good. He had a couple strikeouts.
He was great. He probably would have gone 7 or 8 innings. He was electric last night, and it really changed the complexion of the game. The Mets were pretty much out of the game after that point. They lost 9-1. I mean, they were pretty much out of the game after that.
And you knew that the minute that he got ejected,
that
the Mets were not winning. They weren't winning.
Absolutely not. I 100% agree with that. And, you know, I honestly am surprised Terry Collins was as cool as he was when he got thrown out of the game. I would have been livid. I think it was ridiculous that he got thrown out of the game. It was ridiculous. There was no warning from either side. I would have had no problem if there was a warning and then Syndergaard came inside and hit someone inadvertently and they threw him out of the game, I would have been fine.
Also,
with
there
that.
Was no warning before the game. Well, so the idea that, oh,
and the idea that there is a warning before the game is ridiculous. Why should there be a warning when nothing happened? The point of a warning is something happens to warrant a warning.
Usually.
Usually. like there's something happens to warrant a warning. What was the warrant of the warning? That Chase Utley gave a dirty slide to Ruben Tejada in a playoff game in October? That's the warning?
Which he was not penalized for.
Which he was not penalized for. So there's no issue there. So there was nothing. There was no reason for anyone to be on alert. And the Mets and Dodgers had played five games prior. They had played five games this year going into last night, and there had been no issue. So there's no reason for there to be a warning before the game, which there wasn't. So there was no reason for Noah Syndergaard to be thrown out of the game.
Jackson in Westchester, you're on Sports Talk 1240 with Dan and Jake. Jackson, what's going on?
Guys, thanks for having me. Enjoy the show as always.
Thanks, Jackson. What's on your mind?
You know, you guys just took it right out of me. This has been going on for, I don't know, tens of years, and ever since baseball's inception. Why is it changing now? And you're right, Dan. There wasn't a warning before the game. And the fact of the matter is, you're right in saying if someone wanted to do this to Utley, they would have done it already. I mean, this didn't have to wait till what, the seventh or eighth game to be done, going all the way back to last October. I just think that, I mean, if you're prolonging it, it's one thing. But, you know, look, bottom line is, it's been going on forever. They, you know, the pitchers deserve warnings. They do, because guess what? If they didn't have warnings, they wouldn't throw at the guys. It's that simple. If they know they're going to get ejected on the on their first strike, they wouldn't. Syndergaard would not have thrown behind.
Of course
that.
Not, Jack.
Really the fact of the matter.
Jackson, you hit the nail right on the head. If Noah Syndergaard had known that if he threw behind Chase Utley, he would have been ejected from the game, he would have struck the guy out on a wicked slider, and that would have been the end of it. He wouldn't have gone after him. The point was to just throw behind him. You're going to warn both sides, and that would have been the end of it. That would have been the end of it. Clearly, it was clearly it was intentional. You know, I know after the game, he's not going to admit it was intentional. And
he don't want to be suspended.
And there were people that said, like, yeah, I was listening on, you know, ESPN before for the game, and, you know, the great Jessica Mendoza, and Jackson, thanks for the call, we appreciate it. Jessica Mendoza said she was surprised that Noah Syndergaard didn't admit that there was intent on that. He's not going to admit he threw at someone. Come on. Of course he's going to say it got away from him. But we all knew he came inside. I don't think he tried to hit him, but he wanted to throw behind him.
Well, here's the thing. Obviously, he's not going to say that he threw at Chase Utley, because then Major League Baseball has to suspend him.
Of course.
Because by rule, you are not allowed to throw at someone intentionally. That warrants for being ejected and a possible suspension. Well, he was already ejected, so they would review possible suspension. If he admits that he threw at him, he would be suspended.
He's not going to admit he thrown at him, and we all know he did. So for people to be bashing him, like I heard earlier today, that he didn't admit that there was intent there, is ridiculous. He's not going to admit he intentionally threw at someone, but we all know he intentionally threw the ball behind Chase Utley. He obviously did. Rene Rivera, the Mets catcher last night, called for a changeup away. It was a fastball 15 inches on the other side behind him. It was obviously intentional.
That was the quickest ejection I've ever seen.
There was no reason for an ejection. It was really ridiculous. It was an ejection. Well, I was shocked.
You're talking about an umpire that is, I think, only in his
33 years old.
Very young. If there was a veteran umpire behind home plate, I almost guarantee there would not have been an ejection. Both teams would have been warned, and that would have been the end of it. But instead, we're sitting here hosting a sports talk show right here on Long Island, and we're talking about Noah Syndergaard thrown behind Chase Utley, something that took place in the playoffs with Utley sliding into Ruben Tejada is still relevant months later, a new season later, here at the end of May.
It's not relevant, but the fact is Noah Syndergaard wanted to throw behind him, just to maybe send a message for whatever the reason is. He wanted to throw behind him, and for no reason should he have been ejected. It makes it a big issue. We're talking about it tonight, which we should be. It happened. But it shouldn't have happened. There should have been no reason he should have been thrown out of the game. And I was shocked he threw him out of the game. I was really shocked that quick of an ejection came for throwing right behind a guy in the third inning.
631-888-AA11. That's the phone number to get involved right here on Sports Talk 1240. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Asman. You can follow Dan on Twitter at Dan Budick. I want to ask you about Matt Harvey, Dan. I know you're going to the game tomorrow with your father. Should be a good Memorial
Day.
It's supposed to rain, so hopefully.
It's supposed to pour. Hopefully it holds off.
Very ironic. It's been a great weekend. Very hot here on Long Island. Everyone's at the beach doing Long Island things, of course. But it's supposed to rain tomorrow, and kind of fitting based on what Matt Harvey's season has looked like. He'll be on the mound tomorrow against Chris Sale, of all people, for the White Sox.
Sale got scratched. Sale's not pitching tomorrow.
Did he really?
Quintero's pitching tomorrow, yeah.
Oh, that's still very good. Obviously not Chris Sale, but Quintero's really good.
I would have loved
really
to see Harvey Sale, honestly. But
yeah, that would have been a really good matchup, assuming Harvey could get back on track, which is The big question, nobody knows. Matt Harvey right now, 6.08 ERA. We were talking about him in comparison to Michael Pineda before. His record at 3-7. If he bombs tomorrow and he does not have his stuff, you'll be at the building. The boos are going to be coming out. If you're the Mets and you're Terry Collins and Sandy Alderson, what do you do with Matt Harvey if he goes out there tomorrow and struggles again? How many times can you keep throwing him out there every 5 days in this rotation?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on how he pitches tomorrow, obviously. If he's if there's any sign that he's better tomorrow, he'll pitch his next start. If he strikes out seven and gives up four runs in five innings, he'll pitch his next start.
Would you really want him to go maybe five innings, give up four runs?
No,
is that much better than three runs?
I agree with you, but I think...
Wouldn't you rather be one away or the other so you know if he's fixed or not?
Well, I agree. 100%. In my opinion, I agree with you.
What's the point if he goes out there, goes five innings, gives up two runs, leaves with the bases
loaded? But they're
loaded.
Not. But you know, and just knowing how the Mets have handled this situation over the last couple weeks, I know for a fact that if there's any sign of improvement, he will pitch his next start. If he's god-awful tomorrow...
Which he very well might be,
I don't think he's going to make his next start.
Father's not going to be happy if he's awful.
He won't be, but I think they might have to skip him one time through a rotation. I'm not a fan of sending him to the minor leagues. I don't think it'll do him that much good. I just think you got to skip him and try to work it out from there.
I would fake DL him, and I would let him just get his head straight. Because Matt Harvey, the biggest thing with this guy is he's a bulldog out there on the mound.
Well, he hasn't been. That's the problem.
Dark Knight. He's got the confidence. He's supposed to be able to say, my best stuff is better than whatever you could do in that batter's box, and I can get you out. And listen, I didn't play Major League Baseball. It's abundantly obvious, and neither did you, Dan. Neither did most people that talk about sports for a living. But you look at Matt Harvey and you say, what happened to this guy? Where's his confidence?
He's just been terrible.
This is not the same guy that went out there in Game 5 of the World Series last year and had one of the best pitching performances you'll probably almost ever see. He was that close to having an historic New York moment. This is not the same guy we're watching right now.
And people say, is it mechanical? Is it this?
I think it's a lot of things.
Well, I think it's a combination of things, but I think the top of the thing is I don't think he has any confidence. At least I've seen on the mound. He has no confidence in his secondary pitches. He can't get them over for strikes. He doesn't have the movement that he's had. He just hasn't been that good. He hasn't been as good. He hasn't had any command of the strike zone. He hasn't been able to strike anyone out, and that's the most alarming thing is, you know, he hasn't been able to blow the fastball by people. And he's throwing hard. He's throwing 96 miles an hour. He just hasn't been able to get that little extra on it that he's been able to get, and his secondary pitches hasn't been working. If he doesn't improve tomorrow and he's bad, I have to think the Mets are going to do something.
Going into the top of the fifth inning in the Met game, that game, of course, at Citi Field, Sunday Night Baseball. The Mets taking on the Dodgers in the final game of that series. 631-888-8811. Once again, 631-888-8811. That's the phone number to get involved right here on Sports Talk 1240. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets and Ryan Fitzpatrick's contract situation. Is it possible that Fitzpatrick might not sign at all? We'll get to that right after the break.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on SportsTalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to SportsTalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community.
And now, back to the show.
We are back here on Sports Talk 1240 AM WGBB. Dan Budick alongside Jake Asman. The number to the call is 631-888-8811. We opened up the show talking a little Yankees, switched over to the Mets and the whole Noah Syndergaard situation last night and him getting ejected in the third inning. Switching gears a little bit to football, the New York Jets still quarterbackless. Trying to get a deal done with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Reported 3-year, $24 million offer came. Was leaked today. We don't know as far as what's going to happen with that, but a deal really got to get done soon. As we sit here on May 29th at 9:33 p.m., the Jets are without a starting quarterback, and a starting quarterback last year that threw them 31 touchdown passes and almost brought them to the playoffs.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, we sat here and had conversations during the season last year. No doubt Fitzpatrick will be the Jets starting quarterback
next
year.
It was without a question.
But the fact that let me make this very clear, and I'm not changing my stance. My stance this entire time has been the Jets will work out a deal with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He will be under center, if healthy, week one against the Cincinnati Bengals on 9/11 at MetLife Stadium this September. I still believe that. But you look at where they are right now, and the two sides were not negotiating through the media. All of a sudden, Fitzpatrick says last week that he's happy that it hasn't been made public, the negotiations. Then you find out that Eric Decker skips OTAs because he's protesting his quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, not being signed. Then all of a sudden, I think that really ticked off the Jets front office, and they leaked the rumored contract deal to try and make Fitzpatrick look bad. Because if you look at this deal, on paper, the fact that he's making $12 million a year in the first year, a lot of fans are going to say, how's he not taking the money? But the thing with NFL contracts is you can't just look at the first year of the deal. If the deal that came out today is true, what got leaked out, he's only making $6 million in years two and three, which is why he's not signing that contract, because he wants more guaranteed money.
And he's
money.
Not going to sign that.
No,
there's
and this
no
is not
going to
get resolved with that deal.
I agree, because the $12 million the first year is just – That's the ballpark he wants. But as far as the last 2 years, he would be so underpaid at $6 million a year if next year he performs even remotely close to how good he was last year for the Jets. For instance, say he throws 27 touchdown passes next year and throws 15 or 16 interceptions. Going into another season, $6 million, that is extremely underpaid for a guy who is middle of the pack quarterback in the National Football League.
I just can't believe we're here on May 29th and these two sides can't make a deal.
I can't believe the Jets are only willing to sucker up $6 million on the last 2 years of that contract.
Well, let me say something.
I'm usually pro team, and I'm all about the money. Take the money, $12 million, mm-hmm. But $6 million is really low ball in the last 2 years of that contract for a 3-year deal. I mean, he should maybe be making a lot more than that.
My
can't
question
guarantee
is, why can't they come up with some sort of deal where he's making $12 million in the first year, and maybe he has a team option for the second year that maybe, if it doesn't get picked up, he gets some money anyway, and he gets to be a free agent again.
Well, I think eventually that's going to have to be a resolution.
I mean, at what point do you just say, if you're the Jets, all right, he's not taking it, time to move on?
It's May 29th now.
Do you want Geno Smith being your team starting quarterback? What's the real deadline? Is it training camp? Is it week one? Is it a couple weeks into the preseason? Who knows what it is?
I'm just shocked we're sitting here, and I'll tell you what, going into free agency, whenever it kicked off on March 6th, I probably would have thought by March 8th the Jets would have Ryan Fitzpatrick signed. I really did not think this would be a prolonged
issue. I mean, the way the media also made it seem, and everyone who covers the Jets, and just the overall buzz you got from the front office, from Fitzpatrick himself, who said so many different times he wants to be back with the New York Jets.
Well, he definitely does. There's nowhere else for him to go. Where else is this guy going to play football next year in the NFL?
Isn't it amazing that he hasn't been signed? Like, what is really stopping this? Is it Fitzpatrick's side, or are the Jets really giving him that bad of a contract that he can't take it?
Well, I think also it's a combination of both things. I think Fitzpatrick sees the kind of year he had last year. He sees the kind of contracts that guys like Brock Osweiler are making. And even though you can't compare the two in age and you can't compare the kind of money, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick sees the market and where he should be. And, you know, sort of looking at it, you could understand where he's coming from. The guy wants to make as much money as possible. But the bottom line is, both sides really don't have that much leverage. They need each other. The Jets need Fitzpatrick to play quarterback for them next year. And Ryan Fitzpatrick needs to play quarterback for the Jets, because I'm not too sure if he were to go anywhere else, which it doesn't look like that's an option. If he were to go anywhere else, where is he having the kind of success that he would have with the Jets? Where is he throwing to the kind of receivers and the kind of weapons and have that kind of team? that he would have if he went back to the Jets. It's not there.
Also, Chan Gailey is his offensive coordinator. The only time Fitzpatrick's had real success in his career was up in Buffalo for a couple seasons with Chan Gailey as the head coach, running his offense, and now back with the Jets, running his offense as the New York Jets offensive coordinator. Chan Gailey's gotten everything out of Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you made the point, where else is he going to go to get that kind of money? Well, the only thing I could think of is if Robert Griffin III blows out his knee in Cleveland, and all of a sudden the Cleveland Browns need a quarterback, but they're not going to offer $12 million a year to Ryan Fitzpatrick. At this point, teams already drafted their future franchise quarterbacks in the draft, like Denver did with Paxton Lynch, like what the Eagles just did trading up for Wentz, and of course, Goff going to the Rams. All these places Ryan Fitzpatrick was considered a potential suitor, they filled up. So unless someone gets hurt, he's not going to be able to go anywhere else.
And even if someone were to get hurt, you're right. No one's paying $12 million.
No one has that in their salary cap.
No one has that in their salary cap, because the problem is, you know, when you're dealing with a sport and you're dealing with a game that has a salary cap, is you allot a certain amount of money for certain positions. No team's going to have $12 million to sucker up for a guy to come in and replace a guy they're probably already paying a significant amount of money to a starting quarterback position. So it doesn't make any sense. So just looking at this situation, I feel the same way all along like you, Jake. There's no way Ryan Fitzpatrick is not going to be the Jets' starting quarterback on opening day. I would be shell-shocked if he's not. The bottom line is, it comes down to not if, I think when is this deal going to get done?
I think if it's not
gotta be sooner rather than
within
later.
A couple, like, I think if it's not done by the Jets' first or second maximum preseason game, the Jets are ready to move on.
That's a while from now.
It still is.
We still have a lot of time between then and now.
That's why I don't think this is just going to necessarily change. But you want your starting quarterback to be in camp. And here's another thing, Jet fans, and I know you're not one of them, Dan, but a lot of Jet fans you hear on social media, or you see them calling up to the talk shows, and you're listening in and you're hearing the general vibe of this fan base. They're like, oh, what, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's never been to the playoffs. Oh, we shouldn't have to pay him. I understand you don't want to give this guy $16 million a year like Brock Osweiler got for seven career starts. But, Jet fans, remember who would be the starting quarterback if it's not Fitzpatrick. You want Geno Smith to be handed the keys to a 10-win football team going into this year? I don't. I saw what Geno Smith is. He's a guy that maybe one day could turn into an average starting quarterback. He could be a good backup.
He can't be the Jets starting quarterback.
You can't give this guy the keys after he got punched in the jaw last year, after he was going to get a chance to be this team's starting quarterback. He completely blew that opportunity last year. I'm not rewarding him by just giving him the starting spot. I need Fitzpatrick back. The bottom line is, I understand you don't want to pay him an enormous amount of money, but there comes a point where both sides have to find common ground, meet in the middle, because as you were saying, and as we've all been saying, the Jets' best fit is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Ryan Fitzpatrick's best fit is back with the Jets as the starter.
And let's remember something here. If Ryan Fitzpatrick does come back to the Jets, Geno Smith is probably going to get cut.
They're going to try and trade him.
Well, he's got no value at the trade market, I don't think.
A conditional seventh.
Maybe,
okay. What are you getting?
The bottom line is, the Jets are going to be ready to give this guy away, if not cut him.
Well, they made that clear when they drafted Christian Hackenberg.
So how can you announce a guy's going to be your starting quarterback when if you sign another guy and he's not even going to be your backup, he's going to be cut. He's going to be gone. They're going to get rid of him. Come on. And I agree with you. The Jet fans got to look at it like this. Ryan Fitzpatrick is the only man that can come in and lead the Jets to a possible
playoff
spot.
Listen, I know he's not Tom Brady, Dan, but the man threw 31 touchdowns last year.
He had a phenomenal year.
And
there's no one out there the Jets can get that can bring them to the playoffs. If Ryan Fitzpatrick is not their starting quarterback next year, the Jets will not be a playoff team. Guarantee it. There is no one, unless you're talking about Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg coming in and suddenly being able to play quarterback in the NFL. Christian Hackenberg's never even suited up in an NFL game. He's a rookie. They took him in the second round a month ago. Bryce Petty's never started an NFL game. I mean, come on. The Jets have nothing else there at the quarterback position with experience besides Geno Smith, and he stinks. We've seen what Geno Smith is at the NFL level. He can't start for this team. The Jets will be a five or six-win team with Geno Smith starting.
I agree with you, especially if you look at the Jets' start to their season. They got games against the Bengals. They got games against the Seahawks. You name a tough team on the Jets' schedule, chances are it's in games 1-7. I mean, I think the Jets have, what is it, 6 of their first 9 games are on the road to open up the season?
Yeah.
It's a very difficult schedule after, let's be honest, Dan, as Jet fans, we can say it. They had a very fortunate, a very lucky schedule draw a year ago and helped them win 10 games. Give them credit.
Well, that's what happens when you go 4-12.
But you look at what happened now. You go 10-6. You don't make the playoffs. And, yeah, your schedule, and I know it doesn't really matter until you play that team on any given week, but let's be honest. It's going to be a lot harder to get 10 games this year under your belt than what it was last year.
I'm telling you, it's going to be a mess of a season if Geno Smith is their starter.
They're going to go 4-12.
Five wins, six. It's tough to say, but they will not finish 500.
I just have no confidence in Geno Smith.
And there's no reason to have confidence in him because he's terrible. The bottom line is the Jets need Ryan Fitzpatrick back. Ryan Fitzpatrick needs to come back to the Jets. He's got nowhere else to go. I think eventually they're going to come to a resolution, but I agree with you. This should have been done weeks ago. We shouldn't even be talking about this. It's May 29th. The Jets got to get a deal done with this guy, and I agree. It's going to take more than $6 million on the back end of those 2 years of the three-year contract to get him signed. I think that's really lowballing him, and I'm shocked that the Jets only offered him $6 million at the back end of that contract.
It really is hard to fathom because here's a guy that set almost every passing record statistically for the Jets, and I understand that he's going to be 34 years old next season, but the bottom line is with this guy, he gives you the best chance to win. And as
really,
a Jets fan,
the only chance
starving to see this team at least go to the playoffs, that's all you can ask for.
And he gives him the only chance to win. Geno Smith was terrible 2 years ago when he started, and, you know, let's call it for what it is. He probably would have been terrible again if he didn't get punched in the jaw by IKM and Pale and missed the
even
first
if he
six
was
weeks,
good, the fact that your starting quarterback at the time, Geno Smith, and we talked about this at the time, we'll say it again, the fact that your starting quarterback got punched in the jaw should tell you all you need to know about the respect level that Geno Smith had in that locker room. When he got punched in the jaw, did you see Darrell Revis come to his defense? Did any of his teammates stick up for Geno? They just said both parties were guilty and they moved on.
And that was the beginning of the end of Geno Smith with the Jets. There is no way he's going to be their starting quarterback on opening day. And I'm telling you, if I'm a Jet fan, you know, and I am a Jet fan, but if I'm paying money for season tickets for the Jets, which I don't do, and, you know, we know the big money people pay, the PSLs, everything, I don't think I could do it. If I don't think I could shell out that kind of money to see the Jets have a very good team with an extremely inefficient, mediocre starting quarterback who will probably cost them games. He's not going to win them any games. He'll play if he were to be their starting quarterback, he'd play decently in a few games and not cost them games, but he'd probably cost them more games than he wins for them. He's a bad quarterback. He's bad. We've seen him already. We've seen what he can do. Mike McCagnan's seen what he can do. Todd Bowles has seen what he can do.
If they believed in Geno Smith, they wouldn't be saying openly that the minute they sign Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's the starter again.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick is the Jets' starting quarterback the day he comes in the door. The question is, when are they going to get this deal done? We have a lot of time between now and the Jets' first preseason game at the beginning of August. But in that time, they got to get this done. They got to get him in there. They got to get him working with the receivers. And I don't blame guys like Eric Decker, who's probably pretty pissed off. He had a year. He had the chemistry with Ryan Fitzpatrick last year. And in his mind, maybe that's in question whether he's going to be back or not. The Jets have got to get this deal done because the guys love him. The camaraderie in the locker room last year, the chemistry in the locker room between not only the receivers and Ryan Fitzpatrick, but really the entire team and Ryan Fitzpatrick last year was excellent. They need to get him back. They need to get him back. They need to do it sooner rather than later because if Geno Smith is their starting quarterback next year, the Jets are in for a long, long 4 months of the season.
And final point on this, the biggest thing that I think will happen from all this, depending on how late it goes, is you have to start to wonder now, if Ryan Fitzpatrick does come back, and let's say it's a week into training camp or it's right before training camp, or who knows, maybe it's really far into the preseason, we have no idea at this point because I don't know what's going to change right now, what's going to make it change. You got to wonder that if and when this deal does get done, is Fitzpatrick going to come in and have some bitter feelings towards the Jets? Is that going to affect his on-field performance? Because you don't want to have your starting quarterback angry at management, upset at the coaching staff. That could be a disaster.
Well,
you got to worry about hurt feelings throughout this negotiation.
Well, you hope that if they do come to a deal, like the Jets did with Revis a number of years ago, and Revis held out into training camp, that everything would be okay when they get a deal done and Ryan can go back and be the starting quarterback.
But it's fair to wonder.
No, it's absolutely.
Especially with your starting quarterback.
Especially with the quarterback position who really is in control of the offense. You're right.
I mean,
you're right. It is
something
to wonder.
The starting quarterback spot is the most important position in all of sports. In all of sports. And it impacts the game more than any other position, maybe other than the pitcher in baseball.
And you're right. And you can't afford to have that kind of tension. If it does exist, if Ryan Fitzpatrick does come back, you hope they can get a deal done that is That is good for both sides.
We'll say 631-888-8811. Both Dan and I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick will eventually be back with the
it's
Jets.
It's hard to think. The only reason I think he would be is it's hard to think where else would he go.
I can't see him retiring.
Retiring? He could still play. He could still make $12 million right now. Exactly. I think it's not about retiring. I think it comes down to the point is he wants to get as much money as he can, which I understand, and I think he will, and I think the Jets will come and they will compromise and they will be able to get a deal done. Fitz has nowhere else to go. There's no other team that is still looking for a starting quarterback besides the New York Jets. The Jets are the only team that is in the market to sign Ryan Fitzpatrick. They're the only team. At one point, you thought the Broncos, they drafted Paxton Lynch. That was the end of that. The Jets need to get this done, and I think they will.
Let's switch to the NBA now. Obviously, you've been following along. The Warriors and the OKC Thunder played really just a phenomenal basketball game last night. The Warriors took down the Thunder on the road, 108-101. They were down 3-1 in the series. Now it's tied 3-3. They forced a Game 7, which will be tomorrow night in the Golden State at Oracle Arena. And just a phenomenal game last night. I mean, we really saw how great Klay Thompson is. I think people know how good this guy is, but when they needed him the most, it was Klay Thompson, not Steph Curry, who stepped up and was as good as you'll ever see a guy play on the road. 11 three-pointers. He set the new postseason record. He had 41 points overall, and you look at what he did in the fourth quarter alone, he scored 19 points in the fourth quarter. Just a gutty performance by Klay Thompson, and just a gutty performance by the Golden State Warriors. You can never count this team out. And for anyone that questioned how serious they were about the 73 wins and how good they really were, could they really go down and not even go to the championship? Well, look where they are right now. Down 3-1, they forced a Game 7. And let me ask you, Dan, can you really see them complete this comeback and then not win Game 7 at home? I can't.
With the way this team plays at home, with the fact they've already lost a game at home in this series, there is no way they're losing tomorrow night. Well,
I'd be stunned.
There's no way they're losing tomorrow night. The Oklahoma City Thunder realistically had one shot to win this, and that was last night.
Well, we said before the series started, if they were going to win, they would have to do it in six because we can't see them winning a Game 7 on the road, and they're probably not going to be good enough to do it in five games.
And agreed.
And look what happened.
They weren't good enough to do it in five games because they weren't beating the Warriors twice at home. They beat them once at home.
It was amazing they got the first game at home.
It was amazing they got the first game at home, I agree. There was no way they were beating them twice. The chance the Oklahoma City Thunder had to put the dagger in this Warriors team in their 73-win season was last night. And they had an opportunity to, and they just couldn't finish it off. They led for most of the game. They led most of the fourth quarter, heading down the stretch run, and they couldn't finish it off. And honestly, the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be kicking their heads all offseason that they did not put them away when they could last night.
Well, you look at what happened.
You said it. They're not winning a Game 7.
7-point deficit, the Warriors trailed with 5:28 to go, and they just got ice cold. Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant in the fourth quarter, they combined to shoot 3 of 14. They had 6 turnovers, and you really saw just that championship, that veteran experience that Golden State has. When the game got close, they executed. Curry, who did not get off to a good start in this one, really picked up his play in the second half. He had some tremendous buckets late, especially that one floating layup he had with Serge Ibaka all over him. That's one of the best plays you'll ever see from a guard. It just shows you why he was the unanimous MVP. And you look at this Warriors team, and we were just talking about
we can't see them
losing a Game 7 at home. The fact that they were able to win the Game 6 on the road in the style, in the way that they were able to do it, it really is just remarkable. They are that good of a team.
And it just seemed like in that fourth quarter, there was something that just – and it just seemed like Curry and Thompson and, you know, that kind of led the charge throughout the rest of the team. Something – they turned it into gear, and they started hitting every three they took. And that's what they have done the entire season. Through 73 wins, that's what they've done, is they've been able to hit the three ball from anywhere on the court. And Klay Thompson and Steph Curry let you know last night that they're still that team that won 73 games, and they're going to force a Game 7, and they're going to win this thing on Monday night because they're not going to lose a Game 7 at home, and there was no way they're going to lose two games at home in this series. It was not going to happen.
Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, they combined for 17 three-pointers, and Curry, we talked about the slow start. He only shot 9 of 22, but he did finish only one assist shy of a triple-double. He was getting his teammates involved.
In the fourth quarter.
It was unbelievable.
In the fourth quarter, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry carried this team on their backs. Klay Thompson was masterful in the fourth quarter. Steph Curry was masterful in the fourth quarter. And the Oklahoma City Thunder could not stop the bleeding in the fourth quarter. They just couldn't.
Well, what have we been saying about the Thunder this postseason? Oh, they finally turned the corner. They got those three stars healthy. This is the first time since they went to the finals that Durant, Westbrook, and Serge Ibaka are all healthy for the postseason. The first time since the last time they went to the finals back in, I think it was 2012, against LeBron James and the Miami Heat at the time. You look at what happened last night, Durant was just not good. 10 of 31, not going to get it done. He's had 29, but when you're shooting 10 of 31, you're not helping your team.
Exactly.
And Russell Westbrook, 10 of 27, Dan. They combined to shoot 20 of 58. And then down the stretch, they revolted right back to the same Thunder team that couldn't close games in the fourth quarter. The same Thunder team that almost led the NBA, I think, in fourth quarter collapses at the end of games. They weren't able to execute late. And really, I'll keep saying it, I just can't see the Thunder going on the road and stunning everyone and winning a Game 7. It just doesn't feel right. It feels like they had their chance last night to get it done at home, Game 6, in your building. And I just feel like they just let it slip, especially when the Warriors were able to come back down 7 with 5 minutes left.
And that's the thing, is it seemed like going into that back end of the fourth quarter that Oklahoma City Thunder had all the momentum and they were going to ride their way into the NBA Finals, but you know, the air just kind of came out of the balloon a little bit and the threes just started falling, and Oklahoma City Thunder, the Thunder just couldn't stop the bleeding at the back end of the fourth quarter, and it's really killed them. And it's just hard to think that they're going to come out tomorrow night and win that game in Golden State. At Oracle, that place is going to be popping. They've had the best home court advantage in all of baseball this year. In all of, basketball this year. I don't know.
Baseball, too. They got the A's right there. Yeah, they steal on every game, man.
But I just can't see them winning a Game 7. And we said it from the start that if it went 7, they weren't going to win. But the fact that they had this series 1-6, and they had an opportunity at 3-1 to put them away twice, even though it was unlikely they were going to win Game 5, which they obviously didn't do. They had a really golden opportunity slip through their fingertips last night. And it's a shame because for most of that game, Oklahoma City Thunder was not only winning, but was in command last night. But you said it. You can't count this Warrior team out all year. And they, just when you think they're going to fall, this is going to be it, they're going to go home, 73 wins wasted, they force a Game 7.
It really is unbelievable. And just late in that fourth quarter for Kevin Durant and for Russell Westbrook, once again, to shoot 3 of 14 and have 6 turnovers, I mean, that tells you all you need to know, and we know how good this Warriors team is. The only thing I'll say for the Thunder is we would both be stunned if they were able to go on the road in a Game 7, shock the planet, and win that game. The only thing I'll say in their defense is they did win Game 1 in that building, so maybe, just maybe, they could find a way to get it done. I'd be stunned. I don't see it. But at least they have won a game in that building in the series.
They do have that to reflect on, that they did do that. But again, with the way the Warriors play at home and the fact that they've already lost a game at home in this series, it's hard to think that they are going to fall in a Game 7 at Oracle.
Really is. It's like a movie scene, though. You look at this Thunder team.
The Warriors are incredible.
They're down 3-1, and of course, the historic movie-like comeback to get them to the championship after they win 73 games in the regular season. It just kind of feels scripted, like they're meant to do this, doesn't it? I mean, it really does.
I mean, I thought it was, I've said that since.
Like, I thought they were still going to win the series for the record when they were down 3-1. Because to me, I just can't see this team that was so good in the regular season not at least get to the championship. If they're losing the championship, it happens. I mean, the Patriots lost to the Giants when they were undefeated. But were they really going to be the 0-1 Mariners and not even get to the title game? It really is surprising.
Sometimes it's just destiny. And I think it's definitely destiny for them to get to the finals with the way they came back.
At the minimum, they got to get back.
Well, at the minimum, and I think anything can happen in the NBA Finals. But you're right. If they did not get back to the NBA Finals, it would have been a colossal disappointment.
They gotta get back.
Still think if they don't win it, it's a colossal disappointment.
Well, that's the thing. We talked about this before on our podcast, The Asmund Budic Show. If they don't win the championship, listen, you're going to remember them as the team that has the regular season record, but it doesn't mean anything unless you add a ring to it. You got to win a championship when you set the record, and they're going to have to go through LeBron James again, and we'll get to LeBron in just a second. But my final thought on this is, you're right. It almost just feels like it's destiny that they belong back in the championship going up against LeBron and the Cavs.
And you know what? I think it's so, and we kind of lost touch of it a little bit, because they were down 3-1 and all everything going around Oklahoma City and how good they were playing and how good Westbrook was and how they were up 3-1 and they put the Warriors on the brink. You got to also remember, the Golden State Warriors won 73 regular season games. Not only is that unreal, it has never been done before. They're the best regular season team ever. They were not going to go down quietly. I mean, as much as we want to say maybe, they were not going to go down quietly. It wasn't going to happen.
Now you switch to the Eastern Conference, and once again, the winners of the LeBron Invitational, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and congratulations to James Jones going to his 6th straight NBA Finals.
I mean, LeBron, and we said it when Black got fired and
they're
Luke
still going to go to the Finals.
Pencil them it's into like, the NBA Finals. Give me a break.
Put it on the board.
Yeah, I mean, give me a break with, Black has no, Tyronn Lue has no control. He's going to be too young of a
coach. By the way, they would have went
to the Finals.
And they would have went to the Finals if David Blatt was still their coach.
If I was the head coach, they would have went to the Finals in the Eastern Conference.
If you have LeBron James, sure.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
does this man not own the Eastern Conference?
He does.
6 straight?
And he will play the rest of his career in the Eastern Conference.
I think so, too. Why would he go anywhere else? Even if he does leave the Cavs, which I don't think is ever going to happen at this point, especially if he wins a title, there's no way he's leaving. I don't see it personally. But, I mean, you got to give LeBron so much credit. And I love how people try to take their digs at LeBron and Steph Curry's doing Steph Curry things, and everyone loves Curry, and people trying to rip on LeBron James. If you are starting a team, I don't care. You could have anyone on the planet. I'm taking LeBron James because the bottom line is this guy is as good as any player I am ever going to watch. I wasn't around for Michael Jordan.
He's unreal.
He's my Michael Jordan of this era. And to watch what he does year after year, 6 straight NBA Finals appearances, and you could dislike LeBron James the person, and some people do. I don't get it. I don't think LeBron is as bad as people try to make him out to be. The bottom line is, when you look at what he's done on the court, the fact that this man is now going to his 6 straight NBA Finals after he left a team, then came back to a team, and it didn't matter. Cleveland went from the lottery right back to the Finals the minute he got there, just shows you that as far as most valuable players go, it's LeBron James and then everybody else.
Agree. And Steph Curry, over the last 2 years, has been the best
player.
He's
been great. And that's no discredit to Steph, but LeBron is LeBron James, period.
Absolutely. And he's been the best player in basketball over the last 2 years. Without a doubt, he's been the best player in basketball over the last 2 years. But the best player in the NBA is the man who has been to the NBA Finals the last 6 years.
James Jones.
James Jones or LeBron James. Come on. Give me a break. The guy's unreal.
Unbelievable.
They're back to the Finals. We all said it. They would. We all said months ago they would be.
You're absolutely right about that. Dan, it's been a lot of fun. Sports Talk 1240 right here on AM 1240. Thank you so much for listening. The show will be podcast tomorrow, so we'll be able to tweet it out. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Asman, at Dan Butik. You can follow Sports Talk 1240 on Twitter, at Sports Talk 1240. All the info will be posted there. Thank you to all the callers tonight. Dan, it was a lot of fun. It was great to be back here at the studios here on Long Island, and we'll do it again soon. So long,
everybody.
Absolutely.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.